This is episode 30 of the Mentoring Developers podcast. You can go to mentoringdevelopers.com/episode30 for show notes, highlights, and a lot more.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
In this episode, I'll be talking to Jennifer Kelly. The incredible thing about Jennifer is that she not only passed through an apprenticeship program and she's now employed as a full-time software engineer. At the time of the interview, she had a five-month-old baby. She was able to do everything she's doing and take care of a newborn baby. And on top of that, she was training for a half marathon. Wow, that's incredible. So I think it's a great interview for all of you out there who want to be software developers, who want to know what it's like to go through an apprenticeship program, how to be a junior developer, how to learn, how to find a mentor perhaps. And it's also a good interview for you if you are somebody who hires new developers, who mentors them, and who guides them, you know, in their journey. So, without further ado, here's Jennifer Kelly. Before we start the show, I have a favor to ask you. You know, this show is all about new and aspiring software developers and their mentors. And I want to interview and I want to bring out stories from all of you, whether you are a junior developer, you want to be a developer? Maybe you work with developers, hire developers, maybe you mentor them. All of these stories put together build for us a complete picture, and then we can learn from our experiences and find out how we can be more successful, more inclusive, how we can have diversity, how we can encourage people to get better and encourage people to come to this field. If you want me to interview you, or if you want to be on a discussion panel, go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join. Today we have Jennifer Kelly with us. Jennifer, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Arsalan?
I'm doing fantastically. I know that it's hard for you to be on this show at this time because you just had a baby and you're dealing with that. So so his name is Oliver, right?
Yes. He's 5 months old.
5 months old. How's that? What is the thing that you like most about him right now?
His smiles in the morning, I would say. Morning smiles. And then he babbles a lot. So that's been really fun. Just you sing him a song and he just responds with like, bah! Like he makes Chewbacca noises. It's cute.
That's great. Yeah. We had a daughter about a year and I think three months old now. About what's that, 15 months?
Yeah.
She's a joy. You know, she has her moments, but overall, it's just an incredible experience to have a child.
Oh, absolutely. It's really cool. I mean, even cooler once he starts sleeping through the night, but he's doing really good.
That's not fun. Right. Out of all the things that a baby does to you, sleeping on time and sleeping through the night. Yeah.
Yeah. We're making it work though. So it's good.
That's cool. So I wanted to know, I think all of us want to know who Jennifer Kelly is. So we know that you have a baby. We know that you're probably a software developer. But we want to know from you, how do you describe yourself? Who is Jennifer?
Oh, boy. That is a good question. I would say I'm a very curious person. My background is actually accounting and finance, and I am I'm a big Excel nerd, and I love creating things in Excel, and I really enjoyed that. And it was just through discussions with some of my friends over the years where someone, you know, would mention here and there, like, hey, you might really enjoy programming. I mean, if you really like creating these Excel models, which no one, you can build them for your own purposes, but you know, you don't get much of an audience for any of your Excel modeling. And so that was the first time when someone had mentioned that to me, I was like, hey, that's, you know, I'll think about it, put it in the back of your head. And then just over time, there was an opportunity for me to either continue with finance or break from finance. And I decided to just explore this other world. So at that time, though, I didn't even know what like HTML or CSS was. So I would say I'm just a very curious person because I just always have ideas of, I wish this existed. I wish that existed. I wish I could just poke around and play with this. And I think that's kind of lend itself to me going down this avenue.
That's a good way of getting into anything that excites you, to just have something like pique your interest and you follow it and you're like, that's pretty cool. And you're talking about just, you know, this is something that should exist. It's like, if you want something, let's say that you think the world needs a way to do something better, you can say, well, maybe we can solve it with software. So if you know how to do it, that sounds really powerful.
Yeah, it's just a fun way to like to tweak and explore and to play around. It's just an amazing sandbox, and people can relate to it because we all have an experience with the internet now. So it's a fun field to get into. Overwhelming, but really, really interesting and exciting.
How long ago was that when you were doing Excel?
I left the finance world end of 2013, and then 2014, tried a couple different things. I wrote a book. I started a small business. And it was that time when we were starting to build the website that I was, we were building it through Volusion, I think. And then we ended up moving over to Joomla, having someone build it. But it was in that experience where I was like, God, I just wish I could do this. Like, this seems interesting, and I want to be able to make changes and do this and add this functionality. And you're on like chat with the Volusion people, and you're so limited in what you could do. But that was the first time I was just even remotely interested in it. So that was. That was probably around June of 2014. And then I came across a boot camp. I came across a web article, and it was talking about boot camp they would recommend across the country. And I noticed one was in Akron, Ohio. And being from Columbus, I was like, whoa, that's really exciting. And so I started to explore, and you know, at the time they had a session that was starting in August, and this was probably in July, and it was waitlisted, you know, no chance of getting in. But I continued to just kind of be a pest of, well, let me interview anyways. I'll plan to do it in your January session, but let me just continue on. When I was starting down that route, I didn't even know what HTML or CSS was. Like, I didn't really understand what any of that was. And so it was just a very big step, but I felt like, yeah, why not? I feel like, you know, the future, you know, thinking forward, you know, 10, 20 years, I'll be certainly so grateful that I have experience with technology, this knowledge base, this skill set. Starting that boot camp that late August, when a spot did open up and I was fortunate enough to get in, it was very overwhelming, but it was, you get excited, you know, things start to piece together that you wouldn't, I felt like I never would have learned on my own, trying to learn web development, you know, through reading, through blogs, through all that stuff. It gave me kind of a frame of the world of web development. And so that was, it was good. It was a grueling 12 weeks, but it was, I'm very, very appreciative that I did it.
So that's great, because a lot of people are doing these boot camps, and hacker schools, and they come out, and I wonder what the end goal is. Was your goal to see, I want to learn to build a website so that I can do the thing that I was trying to do earlier? Maybe we were trying to, was that an e-commerce type site? Was that a blog? What was it?
It was an e-commerce website selling like Bath & Body products, not Bath & Body Works products, but Bath & Body products. But we were, you know, going to be based on web. And that's kind of what started this is that, you know, I couldn't build any of it. The final product that we had, you know, had very limited functionality. And so I think e-commerce, you know, e-commerce sites, you can go and they're pretty easy to put together now. But like in my head of thinking through, like, oh, it would be fun. Just some of the different ideas. Like, I think, you know, a site that would engage people this way, or a site that would do this, or a mobile app. That's what I want to. And so going through. So in my head, when I decided to do this, the boot camp, I very much knew what I wanted the end goal to be. Like, I wanted to be competent, a competent developer. And then you go into the boot camp realizing how little you know, and developing a whole new appreciation for how big, broad, vast, and really challenging the whole world of software development is. I think, you know, my eyes were really opened in that. But from there, knowing that, okay, this is a skill set that I want to continue to do, you know, I could either continue into the world of finance and do this in the evenings of trying to learn, or I can change career paths and go into this IT world and get exposure to that, get practice with that. It's taking a step back, changing careers, but that can supplement the learning that I'm doing, like, after work.
How many years did you spend in finance?
I was in finance. So I started out in accounting, did that for 3 years, and did finance for 5 years. So I was, and I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a good experience. I had a great career. I was moving up the ranks and just enjoying what I did. I loved the Excel modeling. For me, I was getting further away from that. I was getting into management. And I think a lot of the traditional finance roles is a lot of budgeting and forecasting. And what I really loved to do was probably more like just more on like working with sales and working with operations. And they are like, I have these challenges, I have these struggles. And I'm like, well, I can try to build you something. That's the part that I wanted, that I really enjoyed. And my tool belt was, you know, I had some experience in SharePoint, and then I had my experiences in Excel. And so that was my tool belt. And thinking of like how much, if I went into software development, like how much my tool belt expands. That was what was really, was the big pull for me.
Is it overwhelming now? Cause here's what I'm thinking. So you knew one tool really well, and that worked to a point, but it doesn't do all the things you want to do. So you want to say, well, okay, let me learn, website building, right? Or software development. Yeah. But then you have to decide, okay, which technology stack, because you can learn HTML and CSS, and that's good.
Yeah.
But nobody hands codes these anymore, right? I think that's what it is. So then we have to worry about server side stuff. We have to maybe say, okay, maybe we'll do PHP, or maybe we'll do Ruby, or maybe we'll do Java, or now you can go into the Microsoft, you know, stacks. Or something else. It's like now you have to make a choice. Which one is good? The second thing is you keep going down and down, and then there's so many things to learn. I feel like this is so overwhelming.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And so what, are you overwhelmed, or you're like you're on top of it?
I'm incredibly overwhelmed. So I think starting out, I almost – so having that very optimistic – I'm sure my Excel knowledge will translate. I think that that optimism was probably good, because I think if I had any idea, when you peel back the onion, you see all the layers. I think I probably would have been, too intimidated, I think, to enter the world. And so with this, so when I was looking at locations, this Akron location, you know, I wasn't considering going to New York or San Francisco or any of that. So I saw, so that you had the Akron opportunity, and it was either .NET or Java. And I didn't know. That made no difference to me. I had no idea. But it felt like there was more flexibility in Java. So I randomly picked it. And this was mostly by, you know, I would ask around. And it was a little challenging, because I'm like, I don't even know what my end goal is, why I need to learn one versus the other. But Java seems to be the way to go. So you go down that route. And then I think that that's probably what I struggle with most now, is really, you know, there's all these shiny objects, and there's these different technologies, and you kind of want to, you know, follow them. You're like, no, I need to continue to practice and you know, make sense of this world of maybe focusing on learning Java and getting comfortable with Spring, you know, then before we go and do some project. You know, I was at one point, I'm like, well, maybe I'll start doing like Swift stuff on Swift, or like, let me put that down. Let me go pick up AngularJS, and then let me put that down and do this. And so that's something that I think I continue to struggle with, because you're looking for tools to help you out. But you can really go down that rabbit hole of, what's the crux of what am I trying to improve on? And so I think it's a challenge that I'm struggling with now, working my way through, but it keeps I have to keep reminding myself, like, let's follow down this path, get comfortable, get some confidence, get comfortable with this. And then you can start to add things on later on. But, it's a struggle.
So when you want to learn something, you're thinking, hey, I want to do AngularJS. Do you look into it? Do you do Google searches on it? Do you read books? How do you learn something? How do you keep your skills up to date?
So right now I'm actually working through, so I've gone through like a couple different ways. Like, so we had the boot camp, and you had lots of examples that you went through. You know, I even spent like a ridiculous amount of time trying to figure out what IDE I wanted to use. And some of that stuff is just going, so you're like, you start a project in NetBeans, and then you get so frustrated with NetBeans, you're like, bah, I'll go try Eclipse. And so you go try Eclipse, and you're like, this, oh my God. So you just spend time, even just as simple as doing, you know, trying to learn the IDE. Yeah. And so now I finally put a stake in the ground. I'm like, you know what? IntelliJ is my IDE. That's where I'm going. And so then you restart a project. So I restarted projects that I did at this boot camp, just for practice, reiteration. Some books that I've been reading, like Clean Code One, just reading through some recommended books. And then I've enjoyed, there's a like the ultimate website development course. So working my way through that, where you just get a flavor for building different applications. But I think I am so much like, I want to hit a button and I want things to run and work. And I just really need that. I really need it to feel very tangible for me. So I'm looking for those types of opportunities to practice, to enjoy it, to kind of get that, like, okay, this is fun. Like, you know, after my son goes to bed at night, like, I want to play around with this versus, geez, I have this, you know, issue I have to work out. Cause I think that makes the difference. If you it's kind of getting into that flow state where I think it's like something like the percentage is like, you want to be 4% harder than, or you want it 4% more challenging than where you are, versus like, if you feel like it's like 20% harder, you don't get into flow state. You aren't appropriately challenging yourself. You're just overwhelming yourself. And then it's just not your best state to learn. So I try to find like, where am I? What's a good, And what's a good solution for me to get that right level of challenge?
So are you trying to learn the technologies so that you will be able to use them later? Or are you trying to solve a problem or to... So the difference is learn by doing versus learn by reading, right? You could say there are websites like Code Academy and some other places where you can get little tiny little bitty projects that you can do maybe in 2-3 hours and say, well, let's get this done, see how it works. And there is that kind of short-term satisfaction of finishing something versus another approach is that I want to learn, for example, I want to learn how to model this particular thing in Java. So Java is an object-oriented programming language. How do I do relationships? And how do I persist data in the database? Like, those are things that you might want to learn, because then you can say, well, I'll use it maybe some other time, but I need to learn it beforehand. Or another approach is, let me see if I can build a calculator that can do some sine, cosines, and then I can do some perhaps arithmetic and algebra, and I can just build this calculator. That's a smaller goal that you can potentially achieve and see, look at it, and then show people. Yeah. But where do you fall on this?
I try to keep it simple, but also incorporating the database. So for instance, like one of the projects that we went through is like creating like an address book. So you add a contact, you can delete a contact, you add a contact in it, and you have a database that it links up to. And so that's definitely, so probably like that level where it's, you're working with the technologies, but you're familiar with it, and it's practicing the full stack. Cause I think that's where I get overwhelmed. Cause I'm like, I don't know what my tool belt is necessarily right now. And, but let me build something that's simple that I get practice with. I get practice with an MVC framework. So I'm practicing with Spring. I'm practicing with Bootstrap and practicing with the database. But at a level where I feel like it's not a 6-month project, where it's something that's tangible, I can see, but I feel like I'm getting practice across these different channels.
Did you ever get hired as a software engineer yet, or are you still working on it?
Yeah, so I started with an IT consulting firm in January, and it's a great firm, and they are interested in my business background. So there's what's neat, or what I feel like I'm very appreciative for, is that there's consideration for, like, they want to give me practice as a programmer, but then I also have my business background that really lends itself to some BA work. And so there's some smaller projects that I can do BA work and bring value to the business, but then they also give me opportunities to do development work. So it's been a good, I feel like it's been a good compromise. Where they can, they're getting that benefit. And that was, and so it was, the hiring process was pretty easy. I think I interviewed, the bootcamp wrapped up in November, interviewed early December, and, got hired, and then started early January. So it was, I wasn't concerned there. I continuing to look for additional development, developer opportunities within the company. So right now it's been more weighted towards that BA experience versus development opportunities.
That's a legitimate way of getting into a new field, and you have a lot of you bring a lot of value because you have this finance knowledge. But some people who are listening may not know the term BA. Can you define that first?
Just a business analyst. And so one of the projects I did was a lot of test script documentation. So they were switching systems, and we were walking through the different business processes. So I was talking about, you asked me about describing a business analyst. And so the a business a, a business analyst role, what I have done to date was for one company, they were switching to a new web application. So we were sitting and walking through all the business processes with their subject matter experts within the business, documenting, hey, these are the process steps that they do. These are the buttons that they push. This is the report that they would expect. And so doing a lot of that, so that way when they hit cutover time, we had all of these scripts that needed to get run through and tested. The latest that I've been doing is I'm working on a data validation. So we're migrating data from one system to another. And right now I'm ensuring that data that comes over is correct. Largely working in Excel. So it's, the world that I'm used to and comfortable with. But then in the in-between, I was on the bench unassigned for several weeks. And so I got to work with one of the more senior level Java developers. We were building a feedback web application. And so that was, we're working through a unique situation for me, giving where I'm doing some VA work to bring value to the business, but I'm also getting those opportunities to do development work and to, and to improve my skills as a developer.
That's good. I think that what you're doing is the right thing and sticking in there, staying within the game, right? If you stay there and you don't give up, because you're getting to do things that are not ideal for you, but you're in an environment where eventually you know that you will slowly and slowly have these opportunities. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and also too, like building my network from a developer experience. Now I have people that I could, if I'm working on a project on my own time at home and I have a question, like I have a network now to reach out to and to ask questions. I have some, I found some just, fantastic people that work at the company I'm at who will always, answer questions and have just been so, so generous with their knowledge and their time. And so I feel fortunate for that.
You must be really motivated to go to work, and you're working full time, I'm assuming, when you have
yes.
So you work full time, then you have a baby, and then you go home, and then after hours you work on your own projects. I mean, that's really commendable. But is that because you're really motivated, or what's the reason? Why do you do that?
Well, in complete honesty, the time after work is challenging. So working on my own projects now, it's short iterations, but really establishing the habit of, okay, this is my time where I sit down and work on this, and understanding that time will increase and change as, he's sleeping more and I can, right now I'm like going to bed at 9:30 because I know I'm going to be up several times during the night. But once he, sleeps more, I can, I can stay up till 10 or 10:30. I've always just been dabbling in other things. So when I was working in finance, I was, I would write a book in the evenings, like that stuff of creating and dabbling in different things. It's kind of, I've always just been a curious person, and I've just kind of always done that. For a while I was trying to trade stocks and trade futures. And so I would do that for a little bit before I went into work, which in reality, you can't trade futures, in a half hour time in the mornings. But I was doing that and, I was breaking even. But I've always been a dabbler.
There are lots of people in the world. If you want to get ahead, then you have to do something different. And I think that's really good that you're trying to do that. Now, I'm really curious about the book that you wrote. You mentioned it a couple of times. I want to know because that sounds okay. It sounds to me that you have an entrepreneurial bug in you, because you were, building an e-commerce website and writing a book, probably to in hopes of making some money. Is that true?
Yeah, I think the book idea was just, I've never considered myself a writer. I've never considered myself creative. I was an accountant. And then I had this book idea. It's science fiction. It's a world with rationed water, and
I love it. I want to read that book.
Well, I really I was thinking about it, and you know, you kind of think about the characters, and I just really had a vivid picture of these characters, and I liked, you know, kind of the it was a thought process of the person who we like to think about, you know, government corruption or, you know, business corruption or all that. But really, you know, in this story, the power is, and that manipulation comes from the person who holds that natural resource. Because at the end of the day, if someone is withholding your water, you don't have many options but to conform. And so I loved that message. I loved that thought. And I kind of went with it. I came up across when I was living in Albuquerque for about 2 years, which might have been why I had that thought, because it's really, really dry. There's no humidity at all in Albuquerque. And I am a runner, so I was always thirsty, and usually I had headaches because I was dehydrated. And so I came across a writer's group, and these women were just phenomenal, just taking me into their fold and giving me a lot of good feedback and multiple times, because, you know, they say don't use passive voice. And that took me probably 6 months to realize what that was. and so it was fun. It was a really neat experience. And then I ended up finishing the book, editing the book. And I was a finalist in a contest that I entered. And, but then I decided to put that down, because it does need a lot of rework and, thinking, what do I want to improve right now? Do I want to improve as a programmer or improve as a writer? And for me, the deciding what foot, you know, to put forward first, I want to improve as a developer. So I have a finished draft, a one-time edited draft of my book, and one day I'll get back to it. Because I love the story, I love the characters, but not right now. Right now I'm working on being a programmer.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I have been editing people's works for many, many years, and so I'd be happy to look at it. But it's. I think that you shouldn't just give up. You should release it. Have you heard of this company called LeanPub? That is just basically you can. It's like software, so you release whatever version you have, and yeah, it comes out as, you know, in all the different formats, Kindle and PDF and so on. And then when you make an improvement, give an update and everybody will be notified. You know, make a price, set a price. If nobody buys it, well, it doesn't really hurt. It takes you a couple hours to set it up. I think you should think about it, because, you know, like, you know, in software, this is what we get into when, you know, back in the day of many, many years ago, people had this idea that you need to really specify what a piece of software should work like, right? And then they would create this document with every possible conceivable option and what they thought it should do and how it should do it. And then somebody will go off and then try to build it for several years and come out. And if inevitably a lot of these projects failed, because, you know, it's hard to know these types of things. And so we went away from that model as a community, as an industry, and went to a more iterative model where we say, okay, well, we don't know everything. We know a little bit. So let's start from there. And then we'll circle back and see what more do we know, and then keep improving it. So how about, you can do that with your book.
No, that's actually a really good idea. Cause I think you get motivation. You get that excitement when it helps you get some momentum behind it. I mean, regardless of whether it's developing software or writing a book or, whatever you're learning, like it's getting that feedback loop is motivating. And, you know, when you're in the trenches, that's sometimes what you need to push through the next hurdle. So that's definitely good. I'll look into that.
I want to talk to you about your experiences. I know that it can be a sensitive topic, but I mean, you are a woman, you are a mother, you're not the archetype for what we consider, you know, a software developer that's out of college, you know, mid-20s, early-20s guy with no attachments and all the time in the world, just give him all the pizza, you know, just feed him and then pop and pizza and then he'll work, you know, he'll sleep there, right? And that's right, the archetype that we have. That's kind of what startup companies, a lot of companies like that guy, because they can totally exploit that person. And that person loves it because, you know, you give them music, you give them, you know, alcohol, you give them whatever, you know, they need, and then they'll work for you all the time. But obviously you can't do that. And so right. was it Was it easy for you to become accepted as a valuable member of the developer community? Obviously, you haven't had that much experience, but whenever you've come across, you know, other developers or within the organization that you joined, was it ever a case where you felt like, you know, they would rather I were a guy?
I haven't felt that specifically. Where I'm at, I feel very embraced that people are rooting for me. In some ways, I think they're rooting for me because I'm not the norm, because I am a female, that they want me to succeed. And so I do feel very embraced in that sense. In contrast to that, you know, I've attended some like meetups, and in that sense, where you have that personality, that young personality, it usually comes with, you know, some ego and you know, I can, this programming thing is so easy. I think that where I struggle as a female and not fitting the archetype is probably like in those casual encounters, where you're thinking, these guys are just throwing around how easy this stuff is, and I still feel intimidated by it. And I think that's probably where more of that negative talk enters my world. But in the workplace, I've been so fortunate that I've really only encountered people that are very encouraging and want me to succeed. And so I'm, you know, certainly grateful for that.
And so you think, at least in your experience, that at least in the companies that you work with, for new people to come out and join their ranks and to start up their careers, they do nurture it. They do let you, you know, become a more accomplished professional, right? It's an easier process. It's not, you know, it's not a lot of stress about performance and about knowing everything already and doing everything the right way the first time. I heard somebody say, I was really, I saw a job listing a long time ago, and it said they wanted to hire somebody who was a rock star developer who would do things right the first time, who would not make mistakes. Literally, that was a job description. And I was thinking, these guys are idiots, because nobody is like that.
Right. And that's actually, so I would say in my pair programming experience, I've been appreciative of being able to do that, because you see these people who are very knowledgeable, very talented, and you see how many iterations they go through. So a lot of things, like a lot of code that you look at and you've picked up, that's been cleaned over several iterations. Or when you're looking, if you're, you know, watching a course, a lot of that is the final product. And so it's really eye-opening, and it's encouraging when you see that, okay, even these very talented individuals, they go through it iteratively. And that's not, you know, just like writing a book, that first draft, you don't want anyone to see that first draft when you're programming. It's okay to be ugly. It's okay to be really ugly, because you're putting your thoughts down. And so I think that I try to keep in that perspective. You know, and one thing I think, though, being a female in a culture of mostly young men, is also having a sense of humor. You know, I think that I do recognize that you're largely entering into their world, and so just coming at it with a sense of humor for their jokes where they are, and it's just kind of neat being in some ways when you get to be a fly on the wall in this world that you wouldn't really see otherwise, you know, seeing a bunch of guys acting as guys. You don't usually get to experience that. So I come at it lightly in that sense. It's just with a sense of humor.
Yeah, I think you need a sense of humor if you want to survive, especially if you are a little bit different. You may be from a different religious or ethnic background, or you may be, you know, a female, you may be too young, too old. If you're not like everybody else, it's just going to be different. It's an adjustment, we understand that. But what I've noticed in the last few years, especially, a lot of women are coming out, and you know, years later they'll talk about their experiences and how they went along with a lot of what was going on in a company, but they were uncomfortable, and you know, in some cases they were harassed, in some cases they were uncomfortable, but they felt like they were asked to be like one of the guys. So the guys didn't want to make any adjustments to their behavior to be maybe a little bit more reasonable, maybe a little bit more accepting of somebody different, or maybe, you know, not say things that are offensive, right? If I'm a guy and I like to joke about girls and say bad things about them, you know, and if it's just, you know, an inside kind of joke, then you say, well, you know, okay, maybe. But as soon as you introduce the first woman, they have to now adjust. They have to watch what you're saying. Maybe they have to, if they're saying something inappropriate, maybe they should, one thought is that maybe companies should say, well, you know, you can't say that because it makes this person uncomfortable. Or the other approach is what a lot of people are saying, well, no, there shouldn't be any, there's a new debate about code of conduct, like there shouldn't be any code of conduct and people should just basically do whatever they want, and women and minorities and whoever is offended, they should basically, you know, just adjust. They should adjust. Where do you stand there?
Well, I think, I think certainly I don't put blinders on, but I think I look at the context. I haven't felt uncomfortable in the workplace. Even before this or now in this software development world. But I think that for me, I look at the person. Is this really ill-intended, or is this, you know, just a light, humorous joke? And to be honest, I haven't felt like I've had situations where I was, you know, had to put blinders on and say, I'm just going to pretend I didn't hear that. But at the same time, I think the people that I've worked with have been really great. And so I think that I don't have my guard up looking for that. I think that they're great people. And so when you kind of have that rapport with them and they're a likable person, you get along with them, that you trust in things that they say, that it's not malicious. And so I haven't felt ever, malicious talk or, anything that's again, made me uncomfortable. If that was someone where you felt weird around them, or you just didn't trust that person, I think that their jokes or their comments would be put into a different context. But again, I think it's just looking at who that person is and their overall intention. If they're a well-intended person and they made a joke that I didn't think or said something, or their commentary was, seemed a little off-putting, I would have a different reaction to it than if it was a person that I was like, this person is a jerk. But I've been lucky that I haven't encountered that, to date.
Yeah. And I think that's really good, because a lot of people, most people are good people, even if they're saying mean and racist and sexist things. They don't really see it like that. They think that they're being funny, or because, you know, they haven't learned and nobody has taught them. Yeah. Society hasn't taught them. They just don't know how to behave around other people. Sometimes they don't know how to behave around anybody because they're introverts. Yeah. A lot of us are introverts. Yeah. We don't know what to say anywhere. We're always unsure of it. And then we tend to develop these ideas that if I'm offensive, if I use the F word, you know, three times in every sentence, if I drop it every now and again, people are going to think I'm cool. I've seen that a lot, which is completely, you know, you can justify a lot of this talk and you can justify a lot of things in a certain context. But I see patterns over and over, which seems to me that there's some inadequacy that they're trying to fill, but they just don't know what to say. Yeah. So they're saying something that they think that people are going to like. And now all of a sudden now you have a different person, you know, for example, a woman or people of color, a person of color or something like that. And now they have to make an adjustment. So I think in my personal opinion, since society in general is not doing that, college is not doing that, we should do that as a company. Like if I'm managing a company, I should teach people, right? This is a good way to behave, and this is not a good way to behave, you know, and sort of we need that.
Yeah. Well, and I think, instead of getting offended to it, I don't necessarily, like, I think it's okay for me to voice my experience with that. So if I was working with a young guy who was dropping F-bombs, and if that offended me, then I would say, you know, lightly, like, dude, does every sentence need, you know, the F word in it? And so I think that there's giving that direct feedback and doing it in a way that's not, I'm not offended, I'm not mad, but I'm just calling you out on it, to bring an awareness. I certainly feel that's definitely within my realm and something that I do and I have done. But that doesn't mean I need to get offended. I don't need to make a big deal of it, but just to bring an awareness to it. And some of that comes with, for them, like you get that feedback enough that you start to, maybe you adjust or maybe you don't adjust. It's, but you're now aware that you're more self-aware of how you come across. So it's kind of how I handle it.
Yeah. And this is just an example of what might offend somebody, because it could be something else that somebody else is offended by, and maybe I'm not aware of it. And the point of it, there are two ways of looking at it. We can say, well, you know, grow up, adjust. This is just life, you know, get used to it. Or the other one is like, I know that it, for me, it's fine and I don't find that offensive, but if the other person that I'm talking to, I'm working with, if he or she finds that offensive, I should adjust to give that person the respect that he or she deserves. Even if I think I'm being reasonable, it doesn't matter. It really, in my opinion, it doesn't matter what I think. It really matters what you think. If I'm interacting with you and you've had some experiences, let's say that a person has some certain experiences, for whatever reason, they find something that I'm doing offensive, as a nice person, quote unquote, nice person, I would like to not do that. And so there's this, I think that's just something that we need to understand. I think, and most people will do the right thing if they know what the right thing is. And just the problem is they just don't know. And I think this is one of the reasons I wanted to have this podcast, to just bring out these issues and so that they're out in the open, so people know. And once they know, and I'm sure there most people would love to do the right thing, and they don't want to offend anybody. They want everybody to be comfortable, and they are supportive. Most people are supportive, but perhaps they just don't know how to be. That's kind of what my goal is.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's probably that awareness. I think sometimes we, like you were saying, people act in different ways to fill different voids. But to, to call someone out kindly for, hey, I didn't receive this as you probably meant it. Because I think it's, I tend to shy away from the idea of what's the right way to behave or what's the right way to be. Because people are different, and that always brings an interesting and fun flavor. It can. But I think just being open about how you're perceiving it, I think that benefits all of us.
Okay. So let me change tracks a little bit. I wanted to talk to you about your advice to other people like you. Perhaps they're women, perhaps they're men, perhaps they're people who are doing other things, perhaps people in finance. They're thinking about starting a career or going into software development. Now, you've gone through this process. How do you rate software development as a career for those people? From a scale of 1 to 10, where do you put this?
Yeah, I think it's a little hard to tell right now. I feel so new to it. But I'm interested in I've listened to things about, like artificial intelligence and robotics and, the biotechnology that's going to be out there in the next 20 years. And in that sense, I feel like it's so critical to to be competent with technology, to be comfortable with technology. And so that's what drives me is just thinking in 10 years and 20 years, I'm going to be so appreciative that I am where I am. Just understanding where I think the world is going. So I don't think I answered your question, but
how do you rate it? Is it 10 out of 10? Is it 5? Is it kind of?
I think the criticality of staying relevant, I would rate it as a 10. Thinking of where we'll be in the next 10 or 20 years, I just think that it's important to be comfortable with technology. Maybe not be a programmer, but to be comfortable with it. And I think we think about, it's hard to think of, far into the future or anything like that. But, I went through a really tough work experience when I lived in Albuquerque, what we were doing is we were outsourcing that operation. So people who had been doing a lot of data entry for years and years and years, their jobs effectively went away. And it was one of those things where it was on the, for these individuals, they were aware the technology is taking over this stuff and that their roles are becoming less and less relevant. But they never did anything about that. And I just, for me, I don't want to be in that position. And so I feel like, when I'm 50 years old, I don't want to be in that position where I'm so far away from technology and where the future is moving that I can't even relate to it. And so in that sense, I feel like so much of what we're doing and what we will be doing is rooted in technology that I want to be there. I want to be comfortable with it. I want to be competent in it. And I think it's going to be critical when you think of the jobs that are out there. And so in that sense, I rate it a 10.
That's great. I think you're right, because you can't get away from it. It's just something that people have to deal with, whether they are doing software development themselves or consuming software. You just can't get away from it. So I want to talk about your experiences as a new developer. We talked about how you started. I want to know if you could start over. Is there anything you'd do differently now as a new developer?
Well, I would largely still consider myself a new developer, but what I would say is before I took that boot camp, I would have done more self-study. And in the timing of it didn't really lend itself, because I decided to jump into it and it was starting like the next week. But I think to really get that full value of that boot camp, I think that being a little bit more self-taught beforehand, just to even have just more of a context of what in the world, this whole software development is. I mean, I didn't really understand, you had a vague understanding of these different components, but not really. And so I think that I wish I had gone into it better prepared, because I feel like I spent a lot of time spinning my wheels and just trying to understand how that related to the bigger context of web application development.
Do you know other new developers? Do you know other people like you?
Yeah. I mean, just the other people who graduated from the cohort with me. We've stayed in touch, and I've met some other individuals who took it at different sessions. There's definitely connected to other new developers.
So do you think that forms your support group? You have a support group now?
To some extent, yeah. But then I would also, for me, what's more motivating are the people that I've worked with and just in their encouragement. I feel like that's been probably a heavier support group for me.
So generally I ask people if they suffer from imposter syndrome, and I'm not sure if you're at that stage yet. You know what that is?
No.
Okay,
go
so
ahead and describe.
An imposter syndrome is the condition where you feel like you're an imposter. You are being hired to do a job, and you have some experience on your resume. People talk to you. You talk about certain stuff. And they say, well, you know, you must be really good about something. And let's say that it's software development. They hire you as a software developer, maybe to build a complicated website. And you go to your work and you talk to people and you're like, I don't belong here. I don't know anything about this. I am an imposter. I'm pretending to be this person that I'm not. And all these people are so much better than me. That's imposter syndrome. Do you ever suffer from that? And probably don't, because you haven't had the chance to, because you everybody knows you're starting out. But still, do you ever feel that?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, and even in some of like, so my finance background, the stuff that I'm doing now in the BA role, it's not stuff I've done before. And so you're like, well, if you ask me, was this my first time doing this particular activity, a lot of times, yeah, it is. And so I feel a little bit of the imposter syndrome in that sense. But in the BA role, I feel a lot more confident in, I can pull from my past experience. And so, yeah, in that sense, and on the development side, I would just say that I've had to be brutally honest, because I am so new.
That's good. I think that's
in largely, I feel like even playing, I guess even being more conservative with my knowledge base and saying, yeah, why don't you go over that with me? Where it makes sense. I think that I've even taken that role because I've enjoyed learning from other people and enjoying learning like people's different perspectives on things. So I'll even, as newbie as I am, I'll play as newbie as I can get away playing, because I feel like I learned more that way. That's
great. Yeah, I think this is a good place to be. If you're if you're going to start out, don't pretend you know more than you do, and so you can completely avoid the whole imposter syndrome.
Right. Yeah.
Now, there's one thing that people don't talk about much. I don't know if they say if you were ever, if they ever talked to you in your boot camp about how to promote yourself, how to market yourself, how do you, and that ties a little bit with the imposter syndrome idea, but it's an idea that some people have that it's not enough to just know how to write code or how to do software development. It's also important, and sometimes it's even more important, to let people know, and through their various avenues where you can let people know what you can do, so people recognize you, and that helps you move up in your career, helps you get better jobs or more money, and so on. Did anybody ever talk to you about this?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, from my perspective in general and where business is going, and I like to think of my, I think it's important to think of yourself as an independent contractor. I mean, even if you work for a big corporation, you never know how the job market's going, and you're better off being a brand. So I think treating yourself and what you bring to the table as its own brand, I think is important. I think it'll only be more important in the future. I was actually listening to a podcast where I was talking about the future of, like, you wake up and if you decide to work, you go on and you see, what are these different job opportunities for me? Okay, I'll do this project, and that's the project you work on for maybe it's a 3-week project, and then maybe you want to take 2 weeks off, and then thinking of where we'll be, where we're going, I think it's important to think of yourself as your own little business, in marketing yourself as such, in marketing yourself, like being active on LinkedIn, continuing to support and build and nurture your network. All of that I certainly buy into. I think it's really important.
Have you ever been mentored by somebody?
Certainly there are people who come in and out of your life and you have different experiences. And, you know, I actually, the first project I was on at this new company, one of the individuals, I was doing BA work, but when he would, find an hour in the day, a couple times a week to just sit down and go over concepts with me, and we would do some practice. And so I think people, and then when I was unassigned on the bench for a couple weeks, getting to work with that individual, another individual, he was just incredibly helpful. Answering, very patient, answering lots of questions. And so took full advantage. And so I think, you have those mentors and that experience, certainly. And then I think I believe more in like natural mentorship, not necessarily this formal, like you are my mentor and I am your mentee, but really building those connections and relationships to those people that you really connect with and that you really, there's something that resonates with them, something about them that resonates with you, and being able to tap into them and get their insights. I think that informal mentorship, I definitely have individuals in my world who I would consider mentors in that sense.
So there are two types of mentorship, right? One is when you need help. You're stuck somewhere, you have a problem that you're not sure how to solve, you ask somebody you consider a mentor. Mm-hmm. Or you, like this mentor that you were talking about, and he would come whenever he had some free time, and he would just mentor you in general. There's nothing about solving a specific problem. So which approach do you like more?
Well, I think it depends on what I'm dealing with in my life at that point. If I'm having a career crisis, some of those people who, more broadly or more conceptually, I really respect maybe the career path that they've taken, or maybe where they are in their lives. Obviously I would reach out to those people. If it's more, I'm struggling more tactically with something, then some of those more granular mentor relationships, I would lend myself to. So I think the one thing that's abundantly clear to me is just that you need people, you need relationships with people to be successful, to progress, and to be fulfilled. So I just think that relationship building is really critical.
I think this is excellent advice, and you need to build relationships in any industry, really, in life in general, you need to build relationships. And nobody knows everything. So certainly even experienced professionals, they need mentors too. Everybody needs somebody that they can talk to, and everybody can be a mentor for somebody. So you can be a mentor for somebody who is, just thinking about it. And so you have an opportunity to be a mentor and a mentee.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's always someone further ahead and further behind than you. So the idea that you can pay it forward and it's all circular. I think there's some truth to it.
So now we can say that you're not in favor of formal mentorship programs in IT departments and companies. You think informal mentorship is better?
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm not against them. I feel like I benefit more from the informal for me.
That's coming from a boot camp. That's an interesting and surprising response.
I feel like, when I've been up against hard times or when I need direction, I feel like that there's more, in my experience, there's a lot of candidness in those informal relationships that we build. And maybe that formal mentorship, it lends itself into a more informal relationship. I think that those just connections that I've built over time and people that I would see as mentors, and then into others that I've been a mentor to, I just think that those have been very, very organic.
Yeah, well,
but what I would say is that there's the importance of looking to cultivate that world around you, right? It's not just like it just all of a sudden, like the magic happened. You know, it's really building those relationships and to actively build those relationships and to actively nurture those relationships. Where I've had that experience. So it's not just, you know, my buddy that I'm eating pizza with on a Friday night. Like it's really just, it's truly being active and cultivating it.
Yeah. So being intentional about it. It's,
yes.
It's not serendipitous. It's you seek people out that you think that could be good mentors, kind of what you're suggesting.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, that has been a very interesting session. We're coming to the last part, where I'm going to ask you a few questions that you can give 30-second answers for. And that will just give an idea of how you feel about certain topics. For example, I'd like to know if you listen to podcasts, and if you do, which ones do you listen to?
Yeah, I've gone through a slew of podcasts and I have found that I don't listen to them as often to keep up with them. And so right now, the only ones that I listen to, I do listen to some of the .NET Rocks, and then I listen to Tim Ferriss, if you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. He's like the 4-hour work week guy. I find he just has a very eclectic group that just, I'm always fascinated by the conversation and the topics. So those are the two that I listen to.
It's a very interesting mix of podcasts, I have to say, because because, you know, Tim Ferriss has been, lots of people have talked to me about the 4-hour work week and the idea, but then, you know, other people like Pat Flynn, who is also a friend of Tim Ferriss, and he was saying, well, even Tim Ferriss doesn't work 4 hours a week, so it's a good ideal.
Yeah.
It's, and that you can work certain times of the year, you can work fewer hours because you're delegating, and that idea obviously talks about not becoming an employee or not becoming a slave to your job, and have something that is larger than you, so it doesn't need you to work.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't need you, then you will end up making money while you're not working. That doesn't work well with the idea of getting a job. And obviously you cannot have a 4-hour work week if you have a job. But that's a good idea. I think it's a good ideal to have to think about, because it gives you a different perspective. And there's something else in life besides just getting a job. And perhaps at some point in somebody's career, when they are experienced and they can, you know, if they have an entrepreneurial bug, perhaps they can go into that route and think. Are you there?
Yep, I'm there.
Okay. So something happened here. We just lost you for a minute. So I just want to say that I think it's an excellent type of podcast to listen to. The other one is also very interesting. You listen to .NET Rocks and you work in Java. So I thought that was...
Yeah, I haven't found any good Java podcasts. So if you have any, I would definitely be curious. I would say the one thing with Tim Ferriss, and he'll make the argument. I mean, so the title is catchier than, I mean, not... is for catchiness for in marketing purposes more so than it is for like the goal is to get to a 4-hour work week. The logic of it is just how to be most productive with your time. But he really, he's a fascinating person his passion is really about being a teacher. So how to most effectively learn, what's the minimum effective dose to be, to learn, to master, to always be learning, always be curious. And so I think that he just resonates with me in that sense. So
this is a guy that's a thought leader, and lots of people follow him. And I know personally a lot of people that swear by, you know, his work. And so that's fantastic. I think there is a podcast called the Java Posse. I have not listened to it, but it's supposed to be a good podcast for Java developers. You might want to check it out.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
And then you should also check out this podcast.
Absolutely.
And subscribe to that. And this is a podcast for people like you. I mean, you're the star of this podcast, because it's not about the rock star developer. It's not about, you know, somebody who has 20,000 Twitter followers and you know, who's making millions. It's about the person who's starting out, and we're trying to just create an environment where it's just easier for you. It's not so hard. It's not an uphill battle. And I'm glad that you are on this path, because we need more people like you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate what you do, because it really is an overall intimidating world when you're first entering it. And like I said, it's just sometimes it's like, you know, chasing squirrel. Like you don't know how to focus your attention. And so I think that's probably a big struggle. And so, you know, bringing attention to that, I think will serve many people well. And so kudos to you for doing that.
Well, that's the goal. Hopefully it works out. So, and about screencasts and video podcasts, blogs, do you do any of that? I mean, do you watch those? I'm not make those. I'm sure you don't make it yet.
Yeah, I don't watch any of those blogs. I've been a little hit or miss with. I do like the one resource other than, like, you know, Stack Overflow and stuff. I do like the MK Yong, MKYONG.com. I find that there's a lot of good examples that he goes through on his blog there. So I'll check that out. There'll be some hit or miss. Like, I try to get on follow the spring blog and things that are relevant to me. But I'm still building my blog role, I would say.
That's good. I think that's okay, because it's just hard to keep up with all of that. You have responsibilities, you have a kid, and you have a family, and you have a job. So take it easy and take it slow. I think that's good.
Well, yeah, and I'm very conscious of, I think we're in a hyper-consumerist world right now. And so just trying to balance, trying to that valuable time that... The valuable time that I do have, just to what's going to be the biggest hit. And I think it's usually going through a practice of some sort versus, you know, consuming more information to then have to digest and process and think about.
So now, coming to the final few questions, this is, I think, the most important part of the interview. What's the best advice you can give to software shops or employers looking to hire new developers? You may not have a very strong advice, but what's the first thing that comes to your mind? What can they do better?
I would say helping understanding the career paths, and also understanding, though, how can I add, what's the trajectory like? So sometimes I feel intimidated being that brand newbie, and I'm like, what value can I bring as such a newbie? And so sometimes I feel like if that was better understood, that, like, this is the career trajectory, this is usually the time frame. So, like, someone in your level, if you're a complete newbie, or if you're, you know, someone with a 1 year experience, 2 year experience, like, these are the kind of things that, this is the meaningful value that you can bring to the company. I think that sometimes, for where I am, going on to a project that has, you know, legacy code, and trying to understand, you know, what can I do to bring value to the company? Sometimes I think I get a little, not overwhelmed, but you're just unsure, you know, is it going to be 3 years before I can bring value? And that's unfortunate. You know, you want to come in and do great work and feel like you're making a contribution. And so I think better understanding that is would be helpful for me, at least where I am right now.
That's good. I think the companies, that they should really listen to the feedback that you're giving them, and because that's, you know, they want to, I'm sure they want to make it a good environment for new developers, and they want your career to progress, because if it does, then they're going to benefit from it as well. So now, what's the best advice you can give to somebody like you 2 years ago, a year ago, new and aspiring developer? What's your advice to them?
I would say be kind to yourself and don't listen to the negative talk that you're telling yourself as you're learning it. Look for incremental improvements and not, you know, these knock them out of the park. I think it's, you know, doing it every day and learning just something new. And it can be very, very small each day. So consider that a win versus like these monolithic goals that we often set for ourselves that we get frustrated with. And understanding that it's really a journey of learning.
Yeah, I think this is great advice. And any new developer, any aspiring developer, you should follow you, basically. Are you on Twitter? Is there a way for people to follow you and see what you're doing? Or do you blog? Is there any way for people to get in touch with you?
LinkedIn's probably a good way. It's certainly going back to the marketing yourself. It's something that I aspire to do is to put together a blog or website or, kind of identify what my brand is and what I have to offer. But at this point, I mean, probably LinkedIn. I did start up at Twitter, and then it was too much pressure of what was my first tweet going to be. And so I never got active in it. I'm sure in the future I will eventually adapt to it. But right now I'm not on it. So LinkedIn's probably the best way.
I recommend getting back into Twitter. Even if you're not going to tweet something, just following certain people, and you get lots of nuggets of wisdom. Especially you should go in and follow Mentoring Devs, which is the Twitter account for this podcast, and know when new episodes come out. Is there anything that you want to promote? Any work? I know that you have a book. Hopefully, what I would recommend to you is put it on LeanPub and give us the address, and we'll send it out to the people who follow this podcast, and they'll go all check it out. But in addition to that, is there anything else you'd like to promote?
Being kind to the world. I mean, nothing in particular to promote right now. But as I'm working and doing things, I'll update my LinkedIn. I'll get back on Twitter, all that stuff. But right now, it's probably just being kind to the world.
Be kind to the world. This is sage advice from Jennifer Kelly. And I think the world would be a better place if we all were kind to each other. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jennifer. It was a pleasure having you.
Awesome. Thanks, Arsalan. Have a great day.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 10 or /episode 25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.